This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Jake Watson this evening in for Johnny Burrow. But as you just heard, we have got Charlton's Lilyag and Ella German in the studio as ever. A very good evening to you ladies.
Good evening.
So, as I was just kind of saying in the talk up before our news, it's an interesting one, isn't it? We're not looking forward or looking ahead particularly to the game. We, of course, will discuss it and get stuck into it. But it is a nice opportunity and moment to look back on the last couple of weeks, the last few weeks out in France for this World Cup. On the agenda before 8 p.m. this evening, we'll talk about that game against Sweden. Again, we'll look ahead to the final, which is on Sunday. Karen Carney, big news today, has retired from all forms of football following that game tomorrow. We'll talk about Ellen White, bless her. That VAR decision against the USA robbed her of the golden boot. And also we're going to be joined on the phone a little bit later on by Scottish international Zoe Ness, plays for WSL Championship side Durham. So loads to discuss over the course of the next hour. But I suppose let's start by looking ahead to tomorrow's game. It's the third place playoff against Sweden. Lots of people are saying, is there any point in it? But on the flip side, I was listening to an interview with Jill Scott earlier on today, and she said the last time she played in this game, it was kind of one of her kind of proudest moments. And when she looks back on her career, that is a moment, and that medal is something that she looks at incredibly fondly. So are we being very dismissive of what actually is perhaps a more insignificant game than we're looking at it at?
Yeah, definitely. I think after the other night, you know, everyone was a bit heartbroken and it was kind of rash saying, oh, you know, who cares about the Sweden game? We've lost. And, you know, everyone was really disappointed and, you know, myself included. It was a tough loss to take. But at the same time, we need to kind of look at the bigger picture and see how well they've done, as well as leading, like you said, you know, they've inspired a nation behind them. Phil said, you know, there shouldn't be any tears. We should be happy and proud of ourselves. And like you said, I think the nation is very proud. And it's almost, like you said, a second chance for them now to actually, you know, do themselves proud if they are a bit gutted from that still, to now show everyone, like you said, third place is still an excellent achievement.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was gutted. I think we were all absolutely gutted. And it was a crazy game. And so, you know, to go out the way we did as well was really frustrating. But as Ali said, when we look at the bigger picture, we've made the semi-final for three consecutive tournaments now.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive,
isn't it? It is.
So, you know, I think we've got, as frustrating as it is, we would have all loved to get to the final in one of these tournaments. But, you know, the FA set out a plan when they brought Phil Neville in to make England one of the top women's footballing nations in the world, and if we're getting to the semi-final, three tournaments on the trot, we're on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, when you're going into tournaments, it's a nice opportunity, isn't it, to look back on European Championships and World Cups and look at progression. Sometimes teams have to go through transition periods. I suppose England have gone through one. There's a big, big change, isn't it, in terms of the FA and the playing staff from that last World Cup when we reached the semi-final. So I suppose that has been us counting slightly against Phil, that this is his first tournament and he's not had the full 4 years between the two tournaments. But Lily, kind of looking at the squad now and the achievement now, even though it's the same result of a semi-final place, do you think the side has progressed? Do you think they're a better team now than it was 4 years ago?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you said, we spoke about that over before the World Cup, saying about you know, the effects of the WSL being more professional and training more more regularly, and the players have impressed this season. They've been great, and I think they are progressing constantly. I think for me, you know, it's a case of can everyone kind of, like I said, gel under Phil Neville. So he's done a fantastic job considering he's not been in the job so long. And it's all great us saying we've got to a semi-final. So for me, it's a case now of, I think it's going to be a matter of time before we are in a final. And now that Phil's kind of, you know, within his first time in charge, they've done great. And lots of them spoke really highly of Phil. And it's going to take maybe, you know, a bit longer for them to progress to the next step. But the quality of players is there. And I think they've shown that by being in the last three semi-finals. It's now just building that final little hurdle. You know, what do we need to do now to get over that last step? And I think Phil, with his tactics and kind of the cohesion that the players have, will be the answer. But I do think it then needs a little bit more time.
It's so tough to take, though, isn't it, Ella? Do you think it was a combination of the fact that it's USA and also a very, very unfortunate decision with, I mean, I suppose it's not unfortunate. It depends how you look at it. I think it's unfortunate, VAR decision, that that's the reason why we haven't reached the final.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way. When that replay got shown on the screen...
It's not offside, is it?
It's literally a matter of centimetres.
It can't
be.
Oh,
my God.
It's a big toe. It's literally a big toe in it.
Yeah, and you think, did she really have any real advantage there?
None. No. There's none.
I guess we have... on the good side is that that rule has been used consistently in a tournament. Cameroon had a goal ruled out against us for the same reason France did in their opening game. But I think when it happens to you and it happens to your team, it's all the more frustrating. So, yeah, I guess... people were saying we were robbed at that point, which, okay, it's the rules. You can't really say we're robbed, but it was so unfair. It was so close. And I think everyone in the pub I was in, everyone was off their seats, jumping up and down, thinking we're back in it. This is great. But and then it was just so cruelly taken away from us.
Mm. Like I said, I think it's harsh that, you know, that was such a big kind of moment in the game. And like I said, what happened to the benefit of the doubt being given to the attacker?
Was it like... a bit of clear what was some light, daylight, that's what it used to be, wasn't it? Clear daylight between the
defender and attacker. So it needs to be clear and obvious. Yeah. So if it's so, you know, like I said, you're supposed to give the advantage to the attacker, so I don't know if that rule has changed. But like I said, they were consistent throughout in terms of that. So if it was a centimetre or a big toe, it was consistent. So that was absolutely gutting, because actually it was a great goal and I think that should have stand. And then obviously moving on to VAR, we kind of maybe karma, that being disallowed to then being getting a penalty, which for me, you know, and I'm English, I do think was very soft. And
as a striker, though, as well, what do you think your opinion differs? I mean, if that was you and your moment?
It's very difficult. I don't think Ellen's the type to dive. I think she does feel contact. And you, when it slowed down, there was contact. But was it enough contact to make her drop how she dropped? I don't think it is. Yes, it maybe moved maybe her foot out of alignment to kind of make contact to a degree. But I still think if she didn't try to drop with the initial contact and got something on it, she would have got the ball into the back of the net. So it was a tough one, but like I said, we then got given the penalty. Fantastic. I didn't care at that point. I was screaming, buzzing. But then, like I said, for us to not capitalise on that was heartbreaking.
You know, it's really funny. I think it was 2 weeks ago on this show, Johnny asked us, would you like to see England go through with a controversial VAR decision? Me and Lily were quite diplomatic and went, oh, no, we wouldn't want to go through that way. Yeah. But when that penalty was given, I agree. I think it was very soft. I don't think it was a pen, but, you know, I was shouting at the TV, yes, ref, give it, it's a pen. Yeah. So, you know, but, yeah, it was very soft. And I think it's still gutting that we didn't really capitalise on that lifeline we had to get ourselves back in the game.
Yeah, so a word on then Steph, who stepped up and took the penalty. Initially, we had Nikita Paris as the designated penalty taker. That was then decided after she missed a couple. And I don't suppose you can really argue against that. And by all accounts, her speaking after the game, she was relatively fine with not taking it. So Steph then took responsibility as the captain. Nice to see. But it wasn't a good penalty, was it? You know, let's be kind of brutally honest. Yeah, I think it was. It didn't leave the floor, but somehow managed to bounce three times on the way to the goalkeeper.
I think, like you said, for me, it's a baffling point, and we think about it now. So first of all, fantastic of Steph to show bravery to be the one to want to take it. But I'm struggling to work out how you've got 11 players on the pitch playing for their country, you know, numerous attackers, that what you're telling me just one of them was brave enough to step forward and take it. And don't get me wrong, Steph's got fantastic technique, but maybe the two penalty misses from Nikita already were weighing on the mind. And you could see before she took it for me that, you know, she took a deep breath and she was so focused. And it was almost like I was trying to read her. She was trying to say, you know, just hit the target, you know, make
it
the keeper work.
Good,
and like she's done that. She's hit the target, but she's just focused too much. She's held back. She's not struck it cleanly. She's, you know, and like I said, it's an easy save. And for me, it's easy to say this person that, but the question that has been on my, you know, my tongue, and I think numerous other people, why is Ellen White...
Well, that's what I was about to say.
..not taking... And I've heard a few rumours, people saying, oh, Ellen doesn't...
Apparently she was next in line.
But apparently, you know, Ellen doesn't like penalties. How can you be a striker scoring? It's the easiest way to score a goal.
Yeah.
You can to take a penalty. So I'm baffled. And if she was next in line, again, I find that maybe as a manager, I would prefer my centre forward, who's going for golden boot, over my centre back, to show a bit of bravery. So I'm not the manager. I can't decide. But for me, definitely the wrong decision. And I think that was proven.
Yeah. The word then on Ellen White whilst we're on her. You can talk about the penalty. Should she have taken it? Perhaps so. And then also with the VAR decision, that goal, again, we're kind of all in agreement that he's incredibly harsh whilst under the rules of VAR is offside. I thought she had an absolutely superb tournament, and I think it is a record that she scored in 5 consecutive World Cup games that no English player, man or woman, has ever done before. I think it's an incredible achievement, hasn't it, by Ellen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think she was one of our key players this tournament, absolutely undroppable. She scored in every game she started in, except for the Argentina one where Jodie Taylor came in to replace her. And I think, obviously, there's this talk on the Golden Boot and who deserved it, her and Alex Morgan. And for me, Ellen White has had by far the better tournament. She scored 6 goals, but they've come across a range of games. 5 of Alex Morgan's 6 came in one game where she was given multiple opportunities to score. So I think I feel quite sorry for Ellen that she could lose out on this Golden Boot award by matter of assists. If Alex Morgan doesn't score in the final, she very well might. But I've been really impressed with Ellen White this tournament. Obviously, she's signed for Man City now in the WSL, and I think we're all very excited to see what she can do for them.
Yeah, so tomorrow, what does Phil do? Does he rest a couple of players? Does he... How does he go about this?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Phil, he's made a very big point of saying about his whole squad and how he believes and trusts every single one of them. So it's a case of, does he, you know, go with his strongest team that he has and think, no, we're here to do the best that we can do. We're going to go out all out. Don't care if you're tired from playing the other night. You're in. We want to win. Or is he going to say, look, you know, we can go for third place. I still believe in my other players that haven't had as much time, and we're going to now rotate a little bit. If you're struggling a bit more, then whoever, bring you in. So I'm quite interested to see. I think personally he will rest a few and rotate, just because I think he wants to continually make a point about his belief and trusting all his players. And like I said, I looked at the bench the other night, and to be fair, when it was, you know, I was thinking to myself, if I'm manager, I'm thinking, get her on, do this, do that. I'm thinking, come on, Phil, switch it up a little bit. So it's easier said than done, isn't it? Of course, from the side, than being in the situation, he knows probably who trains well throughout the week, who's sharp, who's maybe carrying a few niggles. But it wouldn't surprise me to see lots of changes.
Yeah, I think it's the age-old question of this World Cup, is every week we've sat here and said, what is Phil going to do? And it's the same case in this one. But yeah, I agree with Lily. I think he'll rest a few. And I'd really like to see a few players who have gone out to this World Cup who haven't really been given as much of a chance. The likes of Leah Williamson. I'd love to see her get some minutes under her belt in this game. He says he wants them all to have that experience and that big game pressure under their belt. And I think it's the perfect opportunity to give a few of those that chance.
We've spoke, like you said, as well about tonight, for example, Karen Carney. We're going to talk about her retirement. Yes. It wouldn't surprise me if...
She's got to start.
Of course, yeah. He's going to then, like you said, change it up, make her start, get rightly so. You know, she's been a fantastic player. So I think she'll definitely come in. Again, I think he probably should then show a bit of, like you said, faith in Leah Williamson. And as well, the fact that he, like, you know, he's trying to get them to play out from the back a lot. Leah Williamson can do that very well. That's probably one of her stronger parts as a defender. Mary Earps is the only goalkeeper the only player in the squad to not get any minutes. Will he think, actually, might as well put Rick Karen's still out? Carly's now had a fair share. But again, these are all questions that we won't know until tomorrow.
Okay, just an update, by the way, from Wimbledon. 15-year-old Corey Goff is in action. She lost the first set and then saved a couple of match points in the second. It did go to a tiebreaker, and she has won it. So it's now one set apiece in that game. I'll keep you updated in the third and final decider over the course of the next, probably hour that'll get done. This is the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport Radio. Up next, we will talk about Karen Carney. The news today that she is going to retire from all forms of football, not just international, following that game tomorrow. A proper legend, isn't she, of women's football? We'll do that next.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Women's World Cup show here on Love Sport. It's Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. Joined, as ever, in the studio by Charlton's Lily Ag and sports journalist Ella German. We've been discussing that third place game, England against Sweden, tomorrow. But I suppose the big other news really breaking today is the retirement of Karen Carney. I remember when I first started watching women's football, you know, that era of Kelly Smith, Faye White, Rachel Yankee. And Karen was kind of the up-and-coming star, wasn't she? And it's absolutely incredible to think that she's retired. First of all, it makes me feel incredibly old because she's actually only 31. But in her career, she's literally fit in more than I think any player has ever by the age of 31. I was looking, 3 European Championships, 4 World Cups, like 140 caps for England. I mean, it's absolutely incredible, isn't it, what she's achieved. Is it the right time for her to buy to bow out. I feel at 31 she must have more. She must have more in the tank. A couple more years, surely, Ella.
I think only she knows. She said in a press conference today that her head wants to carry on playing, but she doesn't know if her body can.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm not a footballer. I don't know. You think, oh yeah, I'd want to play for years. I'd want to play, you know, as old as I can, be like Formiga for Brazil or something like that. But I think if she knows it's the right time to play, and you know, as the England team's progressing, she's, you know, coming to the periphery of that team now. Maybe it's the right time for her to sort of end her career on a high without putting her body under too much pressure or anything like that. Claire Rafferty did the same, retired at 30 earlier this summer. Yeah. She had, I think it was 3 ACL injuries. So
that's more understandable, though, isn't it? When someone's body is kind of at that point now, thinking, well, I've got the best out of it. What more is there? But has Karen had the same injury issues over the years?
Off the top of my head, I don't think so. I know that she's spoken quite openly about sort of her mental struggles and coming to grips with that in football. So I don't know if that plays a part, or maybe she just wants to take quite a new route. A lot of people have backed her to do well in the punditry side of things. But I think, no matter what her decision is, I think we need to just appreciate the incredible career she's had. You've mentioned the number of tournaments she's played in, and not only her ability on the pitch, but also that role model she's been for so many players, not only at, you know, Birmingham, Arsenal, Chelsea, where she's played, England, but also to everyone looking on in this sort of rise of the Lionesses over the last decade. She's been one of those key role models that everyone's looked up to.
Yeah, how good was she? Is she, Lily?
Yeah, no, like you said, she was amazing. Growing up playing, she was, like you said, one of the rising stars, and she was someone I, you know, aspired to. And every time I watched her, she was exciting. She got the ball, she dribbled, she took shots. And like you said, it sounds silly, you know, she's only 31, because she kind of hasn't aged for me. You don't look at, and she's still just as fast and still as, you know, quick and with her feet everywhere. And when she's come on in spells, even for England at the start of the World Cup, I was thinking, come on, get her on. Even the other night, I was thinking, why is Karen Carney not come on? So like I said, we don't know her condition for her body physically. That maybe is a part. But I think part of it as well is maybe going out on a high. She has, as you said, achieved so much. And, you know, realistically, if she's thinking about it, she's not making 90 minutes for England. She's not really coming on as an impact like she would have maybe hoped, and she's got to now think back to maybe club football. So for example, going back to, you know, Chelsea, is she going to be playing, considering the talent that is there, not just kind of that they've got already, the upcoming talent, and then on top of that the people that they're going to probably be getting in as well to boost her. So maybe she's thinking, actually, do I, in the nicest, you know, out of respect, do I really want to sit on a bench for a year and then go out again maybe after that? Or is she thinking, actually, I'm still playing, I've still done well, I've finished on a high with England, now is my time? Because, you know, like I said, she's maybe come to terms that she isn't going to get as many minutes next season. And like I said, she maybe takes on that, lots of people talk about her personality and kind of her mothering role, and actually she'll still have a massive part at Chelsea, and she'll maybe help the youngsters. And wouldn't surprise me to see if she goes in as coaching and still is involved in a certain way. But like I said, maybe now she acknowledges that actually her time, she's had a fantastic career, end it on a high, and like you said, let the youngsters come in through now.
Yeah, I think when scrolling through Twitter today, so many of the players in the WSL and the Championship have come out and said what an influence they've had. I think Julie Flatty really complimented Karen for how she helped her at Chelsea. There's been reports for how she sort of took Erin Cuthbert under her wing at Chelsea. So I think, yeah, I think maybe she's just realised that she can have an impact in football in a totally different way, without it being at such a possible detriment to herself.
So was today's announcement a surprise?
Yeah, I didn't think it would come this soon.
It was a bit of, like you said, it random, kind of like, oh, like Karen Carney's retiring, like saw her the other night and thought she, you know, looked great. But again, like I said, we don't know her condition, and like I said, it's maybe a case of then she feels this is the right time. And I do genuinely think it's a case of not football, she's stepping away and needs space. I think it's a case of maybe her role's going to change towards the coaching, towards the helping the youngsters kind of progress. And I think she'll, you know, get a lot more out of that now than, like I said, maybe going to Manchester City, sitting on a bench and potentially coming on with a few minutes of a game remaining.
As is often the case at the end of tournaments, you know, when you're building up for something for like 4 years, it's quite common, isn't it, that people retire. It's kind of, they've had it in the back of the mind, like, we're focused on that, we'll get to that, and then we'll call it a day. Would we, without kind of going out of my way to retire anyone else, is there anyone else like, sorry, Jill Scott? Again, a similar position here, a similar age, 4 World Cups, that she could kind of maybe look to step aside.
Yeah, we don't know what's coming, do we? I think I wanted to sort of mention this earlier, that England could be in this sort of weird transitional phase. So Jill Scott's 32, one of our best players this tournament. I think Ellen White is 30. I believe she's 30. Even Steph Horton's in her late 20s. So it's quite scary and quite sad to think that you don't know what could be just around the corner for these players. I think I saw Karen Carney's announcements quite a surprise today, and I think I would be surprised if someone else hung up their boots. But at the same time, perhaps I wouldn't be given some of their ages.
Mm.
I think, like I said, most players, and like you mentioned then, people do have in the back of their minds, like, I want to, you know, I'm going to achieve this and I want to get to a World Cup and I want to do that. And like I said, now the announcement has come out about a Team GB. How many of them may be thinking, oh, whereas actually now they could be thinking, no, I've got a year, 2 years, I'm going to push, I want to be in that squad. I then want to maybe go to Championship. You know, that's, I think one's 2020 is the GB, or is it 21?
20, and then we're hosting,
and then we're hosting the Euros in 21. Yeah. So again, not so far away. And I think players like Jill Scott, you know, she can run and run and
she's
run.
She's proved that.
So she's not going to be hanging those boots up easy. So I think, like I said, she'll set out now, potentially, like I said, GB, and then even Euro Championship. So be very interesting.
Do you think that, like, the landscape, though, of women's football has changed, though? Not even necessarily in 4 years, but you can even kind of go further back, that when players reach the kind of late 20s, early 30s, and you start thinking about, or not even necessarily thinking about, but just being on the decline, or your best years are behind you as an international or as a footballer, you think about what you're going to do next. But it's changed now with women's football, that there are so many other opportunities that perhaps, you know, the likes of, I don't necessarily have examples of, but the opportunity is there. You talk about thinking Karen may go into media. If she was retiring 5 years ago, those same media opportunities wouldn't have existed. So it perhaps offers that cherry of, I suppose, almost financially as well, that thinking, actually, my best days are maybe behind me. I can now go do this and be very much involved in the game and still earn decent money, which I suppose is really nice that the women's game has moved on to that level.
I think financially is the key point you mentioned there. Obviously, I'm not blaming male players at all for this, but players in the men's game in the Premiership can be 31, 32, sitting on a bench and still earning a pretty healthy wage. In the women, that isn't happening with the women's team. So I don't blame them if they're not getting enough minutes in and they're not playing enough of the game they love, that they want to influence the game in a different way. And I think in the last couple of years, we've seen this Alex Scott effect, if you like. She's on Sky, she's on BBC, she's fantastic, she's been brilliant. And what I think is really great as well is the likes of the players who's been injured in this tournament, Jordan Nobbs, Izzy Christensen, you've seen them on the screens and getting to get a taste of what that media world is like as well. Claire Rafferty, she's just retired. She's been doing all sorts of media work for the BBC, TV, radio. So, yeah, I think if you are no longer perhaps happy with playing football and you're not going to be at the top of your game, it has changed for them that they can carry on their career in the sport in a different way.
Because again, I think I read actually an interview now in hindsight, knowing today's announcement, it was Karen talking about the fact that because when she came through, the game was slightly different. It has moved forward so much. She said that she hasn't really earned too much money from the game, which I suppose is a little bit sad in a way that she's done so much and, you know, she isn't able to retire and go off like, you know, a male would after playing as many internationals as she had. So it is a little bit sad, isn't it, that's first of all happened, but also at the flip side, that she now has the options of going down this route.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think finances in the women's game has always been a topic of conversation. You know, it's interesting to see how many people don't actually know what women's footballers in the past have been on, or, you know, it's been for years, people have been almost paying to play. When you're talking about a decent level as well, maybe third tier women's football, you pay to play, you turn up, you give your money. That's how it has been for years. And like I said, Karen probably went through that growing up. And it's only recent that now it's become a professional job. You know, like I said, I'm a PE teacher alongside, and I have some of my kids, when they know that I play football, and, you know, I played second league last year, I was playing top league in Germany. But even then, their first question, are you rich? and you have to say, if I'm rich, I probably wouldn't be here full time. I'd come in maybe a few days. But so again, it's like you said, you know, compared to the men, it's a long way away. But it's one of them. Like you said, finances are getting better. And I think, like I said, the media is a massive stepping stone now for women's football, and the BBC specifically have done such a great job with the coverage of the World Cup this year, and they've done an even better job of picking the right people to do the show. And like I said, you've got the experience of Jordan Nobbs being there, she knows the girls, and, you know, she's still then in that environment when actually she's probably been going through the hardest time for her. And like I said, she's making probably money from it, a decent little bit on top of that. So, yeah, happy days.
Speaking of those financial problems that Lily mentioned, people don't often realise, Gilly Flaherty, the captain of West Ham Women, who play in the top division, full-time professional, she's had a pretty impressive career. She was part of the quadruple winning side of Arsenal. She's played at Chelsea. Now she's a captain of a top division side. She tweeted in quite a light-hearted way this week and said, "Oh no, pre-season starts next week. I haven't got any boots. I better go out and buy some."
Yeah.
And that is great. Like, can you imagine Mark Noble saying that for West Ham? Like, yeah, I haven't got any boots to play with. That's unthinkable. So, yeah, I think there's a sort of another world of women's football that people don't necessarily understand.
Like I said, I saw that tweet myself, and I think it's a difficult one because, agreed, like I said, she shouldn't really be at the top again when you look in the men's change rooms and they probably have six pairs of boots for one game. And I think, I can't remember who it was, it might have been John Terry. And I'm a hero, you know, I'm a fan of John Terry. Like, I love Chelsea fan. But for me, you know, he used to say, I think he'd play in a pair of boots and throw them away.
Yeah.
For them, it's nothing because, as well, even though they've got lots of money, they also have sponsors.
It's sponsorship,
so they're not even buying them six pairs of boots, which wouldn't matter to them anyway. Whereas, for example, with women, it's
they're
very different.
They're being paid to wear them.
The difficulty is, I completely understand where Julie's coming from, but at the same time, to have a boot sponsor in the women's game, even top league, is actually quite a big deal. And that's kind of how far off we are. So, like I said, some teams as a whole don't even have a sponsor. And teams, you know, in Championship are trying to apply for sponsorship to get players in and to make it a bit more professional. So boots coming under that thing is actually a bit like, well, kind of, we've got to get on with it and buy, you know, I still myself will get boots, but at the same time, I'm there, I go on Pro Direct and I think, I'm not spending £200 on a pair of boots. God, that's not happening. I'll wait for the sale. And I think that is, like you said, where you grow up from football being your hobby. It's never been really a job, and it is getting better, but until, like I said, we do make that next step, I'm afraid, you know, boots are gonna be our own responsibility, unfortunately.
Yep, absolutely right. Earlier on we were talking about VAR, the effect it's had not only on England, the whole tournament, I suppose, namely Scotland as well, incredibly hard done by, a number of decisions which upset them, and ultimately I think we could say ended their World Cup campaign early. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're joined on the phone by Zoe Ness, a Scotland international. We'll get her take on the tournament itself. And I suppose we could do VAR while we're at it.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, it is Love Sport. It's the Women's World Cup show. Jake Watson for Johnny Burrow this evening. We've got Lily Ag and Ella German in the studio. By the way, in the Wimbledon game, it's the big one, I suppose. All eyes have been on Corey Goff, haven't they, over the last week or so. A couple of incredible, incredible games by her. Well, earlier on, she looked in trouble. She was one set down, faced a couple of match points against her Polish competitor, who I can't say her surname, so I'm not going to attempt and embarrass her and myself. But she won the second set in a tiebreaker. It's currently on serve in the third. I shall update you as and when there are some breaks and a set has been won. But back to the women's game, joined on the phone by Zoe Ness, Scottish international. Zoe, a very good evening. Thank you very much for coming onto the show.
Hi everyone, nice, thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So where shall we start with you and Scotland this evening? Because I mean, we're sat here, I suppose, feeling a little bit hard done by following the game against you. Not necessarily hard done by, just maybe a little bit sorry for ourselves. Is that how, you know, the nation of Scotland was feeling following their exit from the World Cup?
Yeah, it was a bizarre one. I was out for the game. I was in the stadium and watching the game and being part of the atmosphere. It was a bizarre way to have the final group game, to be 3-0 up and going through at that stage, and then ultimately now be out, totally out of the competition. Yeah, it was a really bizarre game and a really weird atmosphere to be in. Listening just to your show there where you're speaking about VAR, it is a big, big, big talking point at the minute, with it being introduced into the game and also into women's football, and now being on that big stage that is the World Cup. So, yeah, a really bizarre game and a really interesting atmosphere to be in. Bitterly disappointing, obviously, not to get out of the group because that was obviously the aim. But yeah, a really good experience for all the squad and for the whole country to get to the World Cup finals.
Yeah, no, it obviously was your nation's first, wasn't it, attempt into the World Cup. But naturally, you're not there to make up the numbers, and incredibly unlucky to not make it through the group stage. So what is your opinion on VAR, Zoe? Because I have to say that initially I was very much for it. I thought that, well, it's technology. It'll get the decision right. And at the very least, even if I don't agree with the decision, I know that the professional here has had a chance to look at it again. But now, as time has gone on, it's just for me, it's ruining it. It's slowing down everything. I'm not against all VAR, but say for instance with the offside decisions, it just doesn't sit right with me that those goals can be disallowed. You know, what's happened to kind of giving the attacker the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, I mean, the laws of the games have obviously changed massively over the last couple of months. I know that we'd practiced with the referees earlier in the year about the offside and continuing with play until the referee has been given enough time to practice, being able to then introduce VAR. I think now when you're watching the games, it's like you say, it's slowing the game down. It's, I think, ultimately given a lot of confusions to people in the stands. And obviously, if you watch the England-Cameroon game, there was a lot of confusion around why decisions had been made. I think it kind of puts a lot of pressure on the referee in the game. But then again, you flip that argument around and you look at the rugby and you look at how they call decisions. And it's part of their game that's vital and it works really well for rugby. So I think VAR is brand new and there's still a lot of learning to go into it. It's obviously part of technology that is ever changing and it's progressing. But I agree with you that it's slowing the game down. And I think there's still a massive amount of adapting and understanding to be put into it to make it probably where it needs to be if it is going to be continuing within the game. It's a really hot topic at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah, now it is. And I feel like it's going to be a hot topic forever. I just can't see it ever being ironed out and being completely perfect, which is somewhat ironic when you feel that technology should make it black and white. But Zoe, I'm sure you've spoken to a number of the girls following the exit. What was the overriding emotion from them? Kind of disappointment, disbelief? What was it?
It's just a pure roller coaster of emotions, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. The girls are never so proud of themselves. I know they're bitterly disappointed not to get out of the group and to go further into the tournament. But yeah, it's all about learnings. I know the last couple of years and the last couple of tournaments that have been coming round, they've always been striving to get there. And there's been times where they've been pipped at the final post. So I think the biggest thing was back in September when we did qualify for the tournament and we were out in Albania. I think there was a massive sigh of relief from a lot of the players within the squad. I know that they've been in the squad for a long time and they've been trying to achieve the major tournaments and get to the finals. So 2 years ago, they obviously done that with the Euros and they managed to go and experience all of that. And then obviously this time round, this cycle of getting to the World Cup, it was just a real sigh of relief for a lot of the older players or the players that have been in the Scotland squad for a long time. So they'll have really enjoyed the tournament, albeit not getting out of the groups, but their overall occasion of being there is something that I know a lot of players in that squad have been destined for and been striving to get to. So a real mixture, big roller coaster of emotions, I guess, for a lot of the players. But where now you can sort of see the change that and the progression that Scotland as a nation's had from you take the Euros game against England, and people would say it was a big loss. You take it fast forward now to 2 years, and you look where we are as a nation. So the only way that Scotland's football is going, and obviously the women's game is going, is forward. And it is progressing at a rapid rate, and it's a really exciting time to obviously come through with all of that and experience it, I suppose.
Hi Zoe, it's Lily. I'm sure you remember me. I've played against you a few times, so hopefully you do remember me.
I think.
I was just going to ask a few questions really in regards to maybe kind of, obviously, like I said, you were with the squad, and I also know, for example, Frankie Brown was a big member of the squad leading up to the World Cup. What was kind of the emotions once the World Cup squad was announced? Was there, like I said, not to kind of bring up emotions again, I'm sure you were obviously gutted to miss out, but what was the vibes? Were, for example, I know Frankie from Bristol, and I know she was absolutely heartbroken to be left out. And like I said, I know everyone is, but, you know, was that kind of a big shock? Because I know that she's a very big character. I know yourself, you're, you know, extremely talented, but you are maybe on the younger side of things and kind of new towards the squad. Not saying that you weren't obviously as upset, but to kind of get a vibe. Was it, like you said, did that affect many of the Scottish players maybe leading into the World Cup, do you think?
I think the thing with any sort of elite sport, you're always going to have a pool of players. So obviously Scotland, similar to England and other nations, they'll have a select squad that they then choose from. So obviously there's only a certain amount of players that can go on the plane to the tournament. And obviously for Frankie, I spoke briefly about people being in the squad and striving to get to the World Finals. I know that the World Cup was something that Frankie will have been bitterly disappointed to have missed out on and not experienced. For myself, I was equally disappointed, but I'm kind of, like I say, coming through a really good time. My age is kind of on my side a little bit. So yeah, we were obviously both bitterly disappointed with, especially being in the squad and the build-up to the tournament, being in and amongst the camp and seeing what preparation was going in, seeing what work was getting done behind the scenes. Just to kind of know what was happening and to not be there was a hard thing to sort of to be able to digest and to be able to process. And yeah, I didn't speak with Frankie after it, but I know that she'll have been devastated that she wasn't there, as was myself. But I think the whole experience of it in the whole women's game, the way the direction's going, it's only a positive way and it's only going forward. So yeah, hopefully in the next couple of years, there'll be more Euros and more World Cups for myself to attend.
Can I just clarify your age for me? Can I? I forgot. How old are you again?
So I'm 23.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, you're probably, like I said, you've got time on your hands.
I'm the cusp of the squad coming at a good time. So there is kind of that side to understand and register as well. Yeah.
And I'm sure you've been working hard in pre-season to get yourself there.
Yeah, definitely.
Zoe, here in England, over the course of the World Cup, it's been kind of unprecedented in terms of viewing figures on the TV. I mean, people in the pubs showing games at Glastonbury. It's been absolutely incredible that this team has proper captured the imagination of the public. Now, I know that Scotland didn't go as far, but how is the perception now of football in Scotland? Is it making the same strides, albeit maybe a little bit slower than what it is in this country?
I think kind of the game as a whole is improving. The women's national team squad are obviously doing very well for themselves and then putting themselves on the map. I think you can obviously tell by my accent that I'm from Durham, so being in and around it, I'm close to obviously Scotland, but then again, I understand what's going, how English leagues are progressing. So I kind of get to see the difference between the two countries and to see where both national teams are and both leagues are. So everything is improving and it's going in the right direction. You've got sponsors that are coming into play. You've got opportunities for girls to go and play full-time. Some may be still studying, if that is their choice. But now, obviously, there's a lot more teams that have created a full-time environment. So being able to kind of see it from both sides is really good to see the game progressing. Back to your question, was it? Sorry.
You're right. Zoe, what are your plans then for next season?
I'm looking to get into a full-time environment. So my contract at Durham has expired at the moment. So I'm looking to see what is